Weaver. I'm interviewing Neil Robbins, who was the former president of Genesee Community College. Today's date is June 9th, 2006. Could you please tell us how and when you first became associated with Genesee Community College and how long you were associated with it?
Yes, Ben. I came to Genesee Community College as their second president in August of 1970. The previous president, the founding president, Al O'Connell, had decided to take another job, and I was working as a consultant for a McManus Associates consulting firm working with colleges and universities around the country. A lot of work in South Carolina and Florida and some of the Midwestern states. Before that, I had been a dean at two community colleges, a new college at Ocean County College in New York, in New Jersey, and Delaware County Community College in Pennsylvania, and wanted to get some wider experience and went with the consulting firm whose head was a friend of mine. But I was looking for a presidency. And while we were doing some work in Florida, I got a call from Tony Zambito, who was then the chair of the search committee for Genesee Community College, and he asked if I would come up and be interviewed because I had been recommended by a friend who was a professor at Columbia University. So my wife and I flew up. She was with me on that particular term, as were my kids. We had to find a good babysitter for them. We flew up and were interviewed in probably June or July of 1970. I was the last person to be interviewed, I was told. And I came up and went to their temporary building. They had purchased, the county had purchased a former True Value store, a great big store, and turned it into a temporary college, which had graduated students just the year before, 1969, starting in 67. So I went up, and we had a good interview. They were really nice people. It seemed like a nice town. My wife liked the town. We could see the beginning of a new campus, so we knew there was going to be a new campus. So I don't remember whether they offered me the job that day or when we got back to Florida, but they offered me the job and I took it. And we did some house hunting, found a nice house that was very historic and very nice. We had to do some fixing up, but it was right in downtown Batavia. It had good schools, so in the fall, I moved up and took over. Al O'Connell was still around, although he had taken another job, and so I got some briefing from him and from some of the other senior administrators, met with the faculty, met with the Board of Trustees. Of course, I had met with them after I was interviewed, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And away we went. So I was there for 5 years, and I might as well put it in now. After 5 years, Chancellor Ernie Boyer, actually after 4 years, asked me to become Associate Chancellor for Community Colleges, and I said no, and then I said maybe, and he kept bugging me, and I said yes, but you got to let me stay in Genesee for another year. He was at the end of the fourth year, and so I stayed as a sort of lame duck president for a year, which wasn't pleasant in some regards, but and it was hard on us moving there. It was very hard on some of my children who were really enamored of the schools and their friends there. But I went to New York and started on that job. And my wife and children stayed there for a year so that number three daughter could graduate from high school, and then they came down.
Mm.
So it was 1970 to 1975.
Okay. And aside from Al O'Connell, who were some of your colleagues or contemporaries with whom you worked at the college, and what do you remember best about their contributions?
Well, you know, a college is a group of people more than anything else, and it's a group of people with a mission. And Al O'Connell did a good job of selecting good people. I was very lucky about that. list of people. I will cover some of them. You'd have to start with Stu Steiner because of his later accomplishments. Stu, when I got there, was Dean of Students. He had come along with Al Connell from a college in Maryland. And he was doing a very good job of Dean of Students and was one of the leaders on the campus, got along well with everybody, a good planner and a hard worker. And I have to say right now, he's had a remarkable record because he became president after me. He's still there today, which means he's been at Genesee Community College from 1967, maybe even 66, until the present. You can figure up how many years that is.
Mm-hmm.
And he has led Genesee Community College to being one of the very best community colleges in New York State and known throughout the world. The second group of people I'd have to talk about before I come back to some of the faculty and other people would be the Board of Trustees. I think the quality and abilities of the Board of Trustees were one of the things that attracted me to take the job. I had gone to some other colleges and been interviewed and not been too enamored of the Board of Trustees, but this was really a good board. Tony Zambito, who was to serve as a trustee for some 40 years, was the leader at the time. And just first-class people who looked upon the college as their responsibility. They did not allow politics to interfere, even though some were Democrats and some were Republicans. You had to look closely to see which was which. They worked together well.
Mm.
Sometimes we had some more difficult times in making decisions. Mike Ryan was a very vociferous and well-spoken member of the board, and he said what he believed. We had two ladies on the board, Martha Jenks and Almeda George, and both of them were a calming influence in hard times. They were very devoted to the college, and they were very intelligent, but they also helped cool things down. A superintendent whose name I will have to add later had been around for a while, and he was very knowledgeable about the local people, and he had a way of resting at board meetings. He swam every day. He was a 1,000-mile swimmer in really good shape. He swam every day he could, and it was most days, and he would appear to go to sleep. When the discussion was over, he would open his eyes and be caught up on everything and come up with a solution. So that was kind of interesting. And Neil Burns, who as of today is the only surviving member of that original board, was very wise with the ways of Genesee County. He was a business leader, and he was also very good at getting people to work together. So that's the Board of Trustees. There were some more people. I would have to mention Bob Fussell, who was from Leroy, which was the city which had competed for the new campus, which is going to come up in a few minutes. Bob Fussell was a former engineer. He rode a motorcycle, encouraged me to get one, which I did, and we had some times on that, but he put in time at the college, and he'll come up in our discussion a little later when we get into some of the problems. So that's the Board of Trustees. There are a couple more that should be remembered, but those come up to my mind now.
Okay, and what about the faculty? I'm sure you
Well, let's talk about the staff and faculty a little bit. I'd want to mention Dave Peters. Dave was a counselor at the college when I got there, and a very good one, and a very witty person, a person who had a big smile and made people feel good to be around him. He was a counselor, and Bob Trantum, I believe another faculty member that Al had brought with him, and Stu, was the Dean of Academic Affairs. He was a what I would call a born teacher, and he also was our person for putting on plays and being our leader in in that area. And after a year about, he decided that he wanted to be a full-time teacher. And so he went back to teaching. Dave Peters became dean of students and was to do a great job there. And Stu Steiner came out of dean of students and became dean for academic affairs. And Bill Collins was the third of the first level administrators. Bill Collins was a former business manager in a local school. He knew everything about Batavia, everybody in Batavia, and he squeezed a dollar until Abraham Lincoln looked thinner. And the good part of that was whenever he went to Bill with something that really needed to be done, he could find the money somewhere. He used to hide a lot of money in the electric bill, overestimating it so that he'd have some money to help me out. But I sometimes had to squeeze him to get it. In the leadership group, I have to include Eva Young. That was her name then. Her name is Eva Bone now. And she was the first employee of the college. The trustees hired her when they got organized because somebody had to answer the telephone when somebody wanted to call Genesee Community College. So she was there even before Al O'Connell. He was a second employee. And I've been fortunate to have good secretarial help through the years, administrative assistants. But she was the greatest. She could read minds. I would say, what was that guy who came in there the other day? I want to call him. And she would say, well, that's John Brown, and I'll get him on the phone. I remember his number. And plus, she was really great with handling people who came in the office. She made everybody feel good. She was the secretary to the board. And she was there for my whole time and made my life much happier. Now, that's the main leadership. But the faculty, of course, are the ones who make the place go. I'll make a couple of comments on people who are not faculty, though. Ed Pickert was the clerk of the works in building the new campus. When I got there, Al and the board had chosen an architect whose names I forget, but they were very good, and were starting to work on the new campus, which was on the edge of Batavia, had about 100 acres that they had purchased. And it was underway. It got slowed down by a strike. It the price went up because they found some rock, which wasn't found in the drilling. But it was there. You could tell it was a college. The steel was up and some of the walls were up when I got there. But that was to be one of my major interests and time consumers over the next several years. It was about 1972 or 73 that we moved into that building. So the first couple years I was spending a lot of time on that, working with the architects, getting the money for it, and finding Ed Pickert to become clerk of the works. And he did a good job on that and stayed with us later as manager of buildings and grounds. The other names are some of the people on the county board. Ralph Lawley was chairman of the of our sponsors, Genesee County Legislature, and Steve Hawley was a member who later became a representative in Albany and able to represent us. So that more or less gets us to the faculty. Mm-hmm. I already mentioned Bob Trantum, but we had good faculty and all over the place. Malin Hamilton was head of athletics, along with a young lady named Dolores. I'll have to get the name. And they started it with one or two other people started the athletic program we had. We were looking forward to a gymnasium, and they were working out of local schools in the meantime. Betty Lane, I'd have to mention, our librarian. A college, and particularly a beginning college, depends so much on a librarian to develop a good library, and Betty Lane was very assiduous in finding and getting the books which the people needed. I want to say Bill, and I can't think of his last name, he was teaching sociology, and he was on all the committees on the campus. We had a union when I got there. They had formed a union. As a matter of fact, at the when I was interviewed, they said, how would you feel about working with a union? Because Al O'Connell, coming from a southern state which didn't permit unions, had thought he would not get any unions. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, he said, if we have a union, I will leave. So when the union came, he had to leave. But I told him the truth. I said I had no problems working with unions. As a matter of fact, I thought it was helpful because then you settle things over in a legal format, but a friendly format. It can be a friendly format,
mm-hmm.
but it still has a legal thing, so it takes the president out of being everybody's granddaddy and puts him, at least as far as the collective bargaining is concerned, on the same platform, and we can work things out. So that probably helped me get the job, since that was on their concern, and I really did get along with them. Of course, every year or two, we had to renegotiate things, and sometimes it was difficult to get money from the legislature, because, of course, they were squeezing the dollars.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it wasn't trouble with the state university, because they were trying to give us more money. But formula at that time was one-third students, one-third, up to one-third for students, one-third from the state, and one-third from the county. Well, your money depended upon how much the county gave you, because the state wouldn't give you any more. And therefore, it was sometimes some begging and pleading to get the county to recognize that we were growing by leaps and bounds. They had grown during the 3 years I was not there, and the growth continued, particularly when the new campus opened. We had a wonderful campus. The faculty won prizes from the chancellor. Every year and still do, have people who are chosen as the chancellor's choice for outstanding teaching. Here, I would like to omit a paragraph because I can't pull out the names, and I'm going to get some names and fill this in a little later.
Okay.
There's a political science teacher who I can see the face of, and he was one of the leaders on the campus. A fellow named Jim, who taught mathematics, was a fine leader. As a matter of fact, soon after I left, he left to become president of a community college in the South. Some wonderful women faculty, and I'm going to have to pass on the names of those, but they will, when I get their names, I can say more about them.
Okay.
So I'm going to stop there and fill that in a little bit later.
Okay.
Oh, wait, there's one other person I have to talk about. His name was Ed the Custodian, because it can't come up with his last name. He came along with the purchase of the building in, of the what they called Value Tech, and he came along with that, and he was very concerned to keep the place looking good, but he was also concerned to keep the students happy. He became sort of a grandpop to some of the students, who would ask him questions that they didn't want to ask of the faculty or counselors, and he would do some counseling.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one situation. This was after we got into the campus. We had an art collection, and the students did some art, and one person did a piece of modern art, which was made out of, you know, old tin cans and forks and rubbish and other things, which was, I suppose, a very good piece of modern art. But he wouldn't get it out of the atrium, the large open three-story room that we had at the middle of the campus. And finally, finally, Ed, the custodian, tossed it out. And that was, or someone else did, maybe. But anyway, he took the blame for it. And so the student came finally and said, where's my art piece? And we checked around and we said, well, it was tossed out. You were given three chances to remove it, and we thought you didn't want it. Or at least that was the position that I had to take since... But anyway, Bill Collins bailed us out. He got a person who had seen it, who was in the arts, to evaluate it. I think it came to something like $700, and we paid off the $700. And it was probably the most money on art that that student ever got before or will get again. But that was just one of the incidents which occurred. And the other thing, Ed, was he wanted me to ride in a clean car. I had something like a Chevrolet or a Ford, black, and it was always clean. So I appreciated that. We'll get back to the faculty when I'm auditing this.
Okay. Okay. Can you speak to any town gown problems within Batavia or problems with the relationship
well,
between the sponsors?
Well, town gown problems, there had been some. Tony Zambito, as one of the early trustees, tells the story on a video that's available about how many people in the community were opposed to the college. They were conservative. They didn't think they needed to pay more taxes. They really didn't believe that there were enough people coming out of high schools in the county to support the college, and SUNY requires that you have 500 students after 3 years. And so some of them were just, we don't want to pay more taxes, and some were, we don't need a college. But the Junior Chamber of Commerce, of whom Mike Ryan and Neil Burns and Tony were leaders, got out there and saw that other counties were getting colleges and put on a campaign. The legislature didn't want to vote for it, but they didn't want to vote against it, as many politicians do. They don't like taking a position if somebody's going to be mad at them.
Mm-hmm.
So they put it up for a vote of the people in the county before I got there. Well, the negative people thought, well, this will be a piece of cake. Nobody's going to vote for $300,000 more in taxes, which was the estimate for a first-year college on the part of the county. But the supporters went out and did a door-to-door campaign throughout the county. Eva Bone was a volunteer on that, and she lived 30 miles from the campus, but she wanted her daughters to have a place to go, and so did a lot of other people. And other people just knew that it was good to have a college in a town. They knew that it brought money, and when the vote came, the legislators were surprised to find that it passed.
Wow.
However, they had a chance to stop it because now they had to vote on building a campus. And it wouldn't have been much of a campus if they'd had to stay for years in that tech building, which was overloaded in its second year, the store, which did have good parking, by the way, but no windows. Anyway, there was another campaign in the newspaper for approving a bonding to get a campus, and it was a very close vote. As a matter of fact, it came down to the last man before the vote was taken, and then the vote was by one person, or by one person above the required number. They got the approval of the building, and it meant the future of the college was assured. That was one big thing. Other thing was when I was there, it was during the Vietnamese War, and the students organized a protest. Now, compared to other protests, it was a rather puny thing. I would say there were, and I think it was my first or second year march downtown. I'm surprised the police let them march, but somehow they either got permission or the police didn't notice them. And about 100 of them marched from the campus, which was about a mile out of the center of town, downtown carrying signs and yelling slogans, which were somewhat embarrassing to the campus about their war. And we don't like your war. And everybody sort of looked at it and said, oh, those kids, look at that. A lot of them have long hair. Which reminds me of a story when I went down to Virginia to interview for another presidency before I heard about Genesee. One of the people on the board said, now, Dr. Robbins, what are you going to do about all these kids who are walking around with long hair? And I said, well, I hope I'm going to educate them. And one member on the board, who was the only liberal person, clapped her hands and said, oh, I just love the way these New Yorkers talk. But everybody else I could see didn't like the way New Yorkers talk. And I didn't get an offer in that job, but I don't think I would have taken it anyway. But anyway, back to the main story here. That was a little thing. Now, the other big thing was, and it wasn't with the town, but the town was involved in it, and that was the, we were on the campus, so it was about my third year there, the Attica riots came along.
Mm-hmm.
They're not well noted in history books today, but it was very big news then. Attica was a prison about 20 miles away from the campus, maybe 30. A big prison, overcrowded, and I had gone out there to talk to them about starting a program for inmates. Several other colleges had done that and found it worked out well, and the warden said, well, Neil, not right now. There's some tough things going on out here, but we'll talk to you a little later. Well, about 2 months later, the riots started. Somebody got a hold of some guards and made them hostages, and they took over a part of the prison. And unfortunately, they killed some people. They took one guard who worked there and threw him out of a third floor window and killed him. He happened to be a student at the college because we had a program for law enforcement. And the town was very much upset. They sent out the head of the prison system to try and supervise it, and everybody knows it ended up with the state police going in with guns and shooting some people, including other policemen, in the haze of tear gas. Now, I tell you all that both because one of our students was killed and because the entire town was upset. Particularly one person who worked in the college. He was sort of my assistant in the public relations area. And he also did some work on the radio. He was on the radio 12 hours a day during the Attica riots. Everybody was particularly upset because Governor Rockefeller didn't come up. And in my later classes, I teach about how an administrator needs to be there. And I think it became clear that Nelson Rockefeller's failure to show up didn't help him in his future political hopes. But he did become vice president. But anyway, it was just a traumatic time, and it really bothered somebody who I'll call Dick, who worked for me. And he came to my office one morning, and he said, Neil, it's really awful. He said, last night our students went to the movies and they were sitting down front smoking marijuana, and the police had to arrest them all, and the owner of the theater is really upset and he wants to talk to you, and I don't know what we should do about it. I said, well, just calm down, Dick, and we'll see what we're going to do about it. Now you go back and take a rest and take a day off. And so I called up the manager of the theater, the one theater in town, and to apologize. apologize and see what I could do to help. He said, what students? I said, well, all those students who were in the front of your theater and who were smoking marijuana. He said, there were any students in here smoking marijuana. We didn't have any problems last night. And Dick had overworked himself to the point where he was unstable.
Mm.
And fortunately, he got over it with a couple weeks vacation and some medication and some, help, and came back to work there for the rest of the time I was there and do a good job, including helping to start the foundation, because while I was there, and that's going to run into one of your other questions probably, so I'll stop there about
okay.
that. There really, oh, one more thing, of course, there were a few people who took advantage of the students who wanted a room and jacked up their prices and sometimes ripped them off. And that was one of the things that made us start thinking about having housing, because the counties around Genesee County, three of them didn't have any community college, and there were students who wanted to come, and that was very important in the future development of the college, because Stu Steiner put learning centers in there. I couldn't get them in, but over time he did that, and that brings in students who pay chargeback and is very helpful to building a building and to helping a college grow. But in any case, the students wanted a place to stay, and I worked it out with a local entrepreneur to build some apartments for them off the end of campus. When I say I mean the Board of Trustees and, and Bill Collins and Stu and everybody else. And they did put it up. But after a year, they decided that students were a tough job, and they turned it over to senior citizens. And so we had to try again. And just as I was getting ready to leave, we made a plan to. No, it was after I left. Sue did it. But I was down in Albany rooting for him. And some land was given back to the county, who leased it or sold it to a builder, and they do have some buildings with housing off campus that's worked out very well. So that's the town gown things, not much else. Oh, one little thing. We got a student newspaper. I think Bob Tranum was being the faculty member on it. And like most student newspapers, they had freedom of the press. And one time, somebody put a story in there about girls or women at Genesee Community College. He was apparently distraught because the girls were snooty. That's the word I would put in, but he used other words.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the words he used was unfortunate. Didn't fit the community mores. And some parents called up Ralph Lawby, who was then chairman of the legislature, and complained about the word that was in the newspaper. And so he and another member of the legislature asked to meet with me. And so I asked Almeda George to meet too, because she was then chair of the board and a Southern lady, and very, very proper. And she sat with me. So he came up and he said, Neil, we've got a problem here. People are complaining about that word in the newspaper. And I said, well, I can understand that, but you have to understand that no taxpayer money went into that. That's a student fee. Well, Ralph relaxed immediately, because he had his way out now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's crazy people on the campus, not the money. They're not using the money we give them from taxes. The other thing that helped was that Almeda spoke up and said, you know, Ralph, everybody uses that word these days, and she used the word, and he was so upset with the, or he was so surprised that Almeda George, the cream of the crop, would use the word. And so that problem went away. Although I did have one thought after he left, We met with the legislature informally, Bill Collins and I, too, or sometimes just me. We had lunch with them after their monthly meeting. And I guess there were no women there because all the legislators and so on. And Ralph Lowy would tell some of the most scandalous jokes, one of which I still remember, that he should never complain about any word that went in the newspaper. But I didn't bring that up. But it did stick in my mind and stay there for quite some time. So that was a long answer to a short question, but I think I covered just about all the problems that we had with the count. And really, we got a lot of support. The man who had been the chair of the legislature when the college started had first been opposed to it, but then he turned around and became a very strong supporter, as did all of them. They all were good supporters after that. They just were a little tough to get money out of.
Mm-hmm.
Stu has done a great job in doing that, and they have provided him with what he asked for every year, for many years. But of course, he had sometimes ask for a little less than he wanted to ask for.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you had mentioned that the faculty and the staff became unionized about the time that you started.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. You said that the faculty.
I got to go over this other year. Go ahead.
Okay. You said that collective bargaining began about the same time that you started your presidency there.
It started at least a year ahead of time because they had a contract when I got there.
Okay.
But Al had made up his mind, made a public statement which he thought he had to carry out, and took a job someplace else. But I really didn't mind working with them because when you have a contract, all you have to do is live by the contract. And everything's all right. When either party breaks the contract, why then PERB comes in and tries to settle it. So we did have a year which there was some hard feeling because the legislature wouldn't approve our budget, our percentage that the college administration trustees and the faculty had agreed upon, but it would have required a tax increase for them, and it also would have affected them because the secretaries and custodians and people were in the same union as the workers for the county secretaries and custodians, and so if they had given the 4% or the 3.5% or the 5%, I don't know what, if they had been what that we agreed on, which we wanted to get to our great faculty and keep them, and they wouldn't prove it. And there was a little bit of hard feelings, and I think Stu once had a placarding of the legislature another year. But those are the only two times where it really got difficult. And part in it was saying to the faculty, look, I like what you do, I'd like to give you a raise, but the people who provide the money aren't convinced. So don't get mad at us, and don't get mad at them, but try and convince them. So that part of it worked out. And other things, I don't even remember any grievances. There must have been one or two, but I don't remember any.
Okay.
They were handled by Bill Collins, and sometimes it was people who didn't want to do it was with, say, a custodial person who didn't think that he should have to cut grass because he was hired to polish silver or whatever. But they were minor things, and they really didn't come from the faculty.
Okay. And you had mentioned that the college started out in an old True Value store. Do you recall how the college worked to develop the campus and the buildings from that point?
Oh, yeah. Well, the building, the campus, when we moved, the building did not get sold. The legislature and the county took it over as office buildings, and it still is, I think.
Mm.
It's on the opposite side of town, the campus. So here we had, We had approval. We had funding. I can't remember the millions of dollars. 9 million sticks in my mind. It was a very unique, at that time, campus because it was all under one roof. It was one long, big building. On one end was the gymnasium. We had to give up. We put in a pool and a very nice gymnasium, locker rooms, and that was on the north side of the campus. On the south side was the library, and over the library, which went up two stories, there were some classrooms. Then right in the middle was the atrium, which I told you about, which was a three-story opening and where we had our big meetings, where Ernie Boyer came for dedication of the campus and called us one of the gems in the crown of SUNY. I heard him use that same speech at many other colleges. but he meant it for the day. And then there was a student union area, and then the classrooms and faculty offices and the laboratories, all under one big roof. So we had big discussions over what color the brick should be. I left that up to the trustees and to Almeida and Martha Jenks, who was the other nice lady, and to Mike Ryan, who spoke up for buying local if we could. And you know, what color the rugs were going to be and where the president's office was going to be and all those kinds of things. But the plans had pretty been worked out when I got there. I didn't have much to do with the planning. I had to deal with the building. And even the strike was over when I got there. But the big thing that happened when I got there, and it was probably the most notorious thing, was the roof escapade. One Saturday, I decided to ride out there with Ed Pickard. They weren't working that day. I just wanted to look around and see what was going on, and so I went out there. Well, Ed Picker went with me because he had all the keys. And at that point, the building was, you know, two-thirds done, and they were putting the roof on. Now, the roof consisted of metal sheathing, which was attached to the tops of the steel girders. On top of that, there was a thick board, insulation board, probably 6, 7 inches, 8 inches thick. And on top of that was some more metal, light sheet metal. And on top of that, there were to be stones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had started on this. They got the sheet metal on. They got the insulation on. They got the metal on, but oops, it's a weekend. They didn't get the stones on. So I went out there, noticed the clouds were pretty dark and getting darker and getting very windy and getting windier. So I went up the stairs to the roof to look at it, and the roof was vibrating. And Ed said, we better stand inside. So we stood and looked out, and the roof vibrated and vibrated, and then a piece of metal got ripped off and went down toward the thruway down the hill, and then some of the insulation came off and went down the hill, and then a heck of a big piece started coming off, and I got out of there. I went down, got my car, and went home and called the architects, the builders, the whatever, and we had a real problem. The roof was, to all intents and purposes, destroyed. Had it had the roof rocks on it, a 6-inch pebbles thing, which allowed the water to go through and then run off through the metal pieces. Well, they should have gotten it done, but they didn't. They didn't expect a tornado or a mini tornado or whatever it was, and nor did I. But anyway, we were now in big trouble. architect have had another kind of roof? Should the builder have been there, or should it have been the people who sold him the materials? And it turned out that the insulation was supposed to have been glued down by covering, oh, let's say, a third of the bottom of the insulation with a glue that stuck to the metal. Well, what they had done to save a little money, and it wouldn't have made any difference where the rocks were on, they just put a little dab on each corner. So it wasn't glued down the way it was supposed to be. And maybe it was the fault of the metal. Maybe it wasn't as thick as it should be. So there were about a choice of about 8 or 10 people, businesses who could have been sued.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, since I was there, which was very unusual for the president to be there on Saturday but I happened to be there. Ed and I had to go before a judge who had set up a hearing, and there were about 15 lawyers in the room. And they asked me questions for a half a day, and then they asked me to come back another time. And as you may be noting, I sometimes talk quickly, and that lady kept saying, slow down, slow down. And I would slow down for a few minutes, and then I'd get going again. But there really wasn't anything to say except describe it, and then people each stood up and told why it wasn't their fault. I suggested that we split the cost between the architects, the builder, the county, and the state, or the architects, the builder, and the state and local. And you know, 2 years later, that's the solution that they made. But in the meantime, they had spent untold amounts of money on lawyers and so on. But the aftermath was, we didn't stop. We right away, knowing they would be paid, the builder went back and started to work and got that roof back on in record time, particularly since one of our trustees, Bob Fussell, the engineer, he spent the next 2 months up on the roof watching those people to see that they put the glue in and that when they got a piece done, they put the stones down. Now, that was beyond the call of duty. Why wasn't Ed Pickard there? Well, Ed was there, but he had to watch the inside things, like the air conditioning duct that a hole wasn't left in the wall. They had to, you know, dig out a hole to run the air conditioning duct to, and the other things that happened. And to fight off the extra cost that people wanted to charge when they had made a mistake and needed to fix it. But that was big news in Genesee County, the roof and the so on. And at least it made everybody aware that we were there. And when it got done, it was a beautiful building. Stu has worked with the local people and raised money. He's made two additions to it. They finally got their theater. We weren't able to get a theater in the first building because the price had to be cut back. And our advice to us was, don't cut out the pool, because if you don't have a pool, you'll never get it later. And that was good advice, but it did take 20 years to get the theater, and Bob Tranum's plays were put up in the attic under the eaves, and he organized theater in the round. But now Stu has a theater, he has a technical building, and, one other thing was unusual. One of our faculty, I can't think of his name, but I'll look it up. Oh, gee. I see his face. But anyway, he was the leader of the liberal group, and he didn't want special parking places for people, like faculty up front, and faculty administrators up front, and students having to walk by them, because it was a big fan-like thing, and you walked into one of the three doors that opened into this side of the parking side of the building. So he started a campaign to have first come, first served. I was a little nervous about that, so I had to go out in the car more than other people, but the board approved it, and we were one of the few colleges that I know of that was first come, first served. Now, I solved that by being first come. I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and there was always a place to park. And if I went out and came back, I would go over to the where the loading dock was. If I worked out okay, but it was kind of unusual mm-hmm. that we would have that kind of parking. Oh, that same young man led the faculty to consider no-fault grading. A, B, C, or X. Why give a person a F and take it away when he didn't do it? It's enough that he didn't get his credit. Why give him a demerit? And they talked me into approving it, and the board approved it. It lasted about 3 years, and then everybody got tired of it, and the other colleges were starting to say, well, we don't know how good the student you're telling us is. He's got a 3.0, but he's got six X's, which means he didn't complete them. And then the people with the money who gave scholarships to students said, wait a minute, you're going to have some people taking 4 years. So it was an experiment, and it was interesting. I was a little bit concerned about it, but decided that that was something maybe the faculty should handle, and it went away of its own accord.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you recall if the College Foundation was active while you were at the college?
Say again.
Do you recall if the College Foundation was active? You had mentioned it was founded while you were still the president.
You know, I'm not sure whether or not there was one there before I got there. I think maybe there was. There were a group of people, a couple of faculty members, maybe Tony Zambito and a few others who had lunch once in a while and said, how can we get some more money for scholarships? But it was very informal, as it was in most beginning community colleges. I know of one that got $1 million before they had a foundation. One of the local people put it up and paid for part of the campus. That wasn't true in Genesee County. So when I got there, there was probably $10,000 or $15,000 in the foundation. And Dick Gamble and I added that to his jobs as well as public relations and other writing chores. We decided to upgrade it by doubling the size, writing a policy manual, getting it set up as a legal foundation which could accept money and it would be tax free. But it also stayed out of the budget so that you didn't get tied up with the state. It provided some money sometimes for the president to do things like, in fact, invite the legislature and the faculty and the board of trustees to come to a brunch or something like that. So we started on it and got it going and met in a motel and did some good. But to tell you the truth, compared to what Stu has done since then, it was just a beginning. But at least it was a beginning. You got to begin someplace. And we had a dinner dance. I remember that was out in the atrium. It was a beautiful, beautiful sight at night because you could look out over the hill and down to the thruway, see the cars going by. It had a stage. And as a matter of fact, Ernie Boyer came to that dinner. And the dinner was so good, plus the dinner that my wife put on at the house for him and a few other people, or a lunch, I guess it was, before the dinner. Somehow Ernie Boyer got there. And that's when he started bugging me to become associate chancellor. And I think it was my wife's chicken salad and luncheon and the beautiful dinner dance that made him think I was some kind of a leader. I don't know if that was a good criterion, but it did get me the job offer, and a year and a half later, I left.
Okay, well, you've certainly shared some very interesting, exciting times with us. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about your experiences? Any other exciting times?
Well, let's see. Well, my living experiences. Our whole family enjoyed Batavia. It's a nice-sized town. The kids could get on their bicycle and go visit their friends. It had good pizza. I joined the Rotary. We're not only that, he was a aficionado of musicals and plays. And for the Rotary, he put on a play every year. And one year, my wife and I got involved, and I got to be Red Nose Regan in the crap game of Guys and Dolls, and she was one of the prim ladies in the Salvation Army parade. But Dr. George was strange in one way. He was never organized enough to know what he was going to be doing any particular night. So you had to go whether you were going to be on the stage that night or not. And it got so people didn't want to work for him anymore because it took so long. But anyway, my wife and I did one show. And I'll never forget my line. I had one line. I did sing in a quartet, but or an octet, whatever it was. They could hide my voice. But Red Nose Regan was watching a crap game, and somebody rolled out the dice, and I said, "Snake Eyes." And that was the only one or two words that I had. But it was fun. I got to wear some gambler's clothes. Dr. George became a good friend, and we just felt like we had a lot of friends. The Board of Trustees were friends. We had some good parties, which sometimes got very relaxed. And unfortunately, one of the trustees in one of those parties leaned against the cellar door and fell down and got hurt very badly. And so that sort of calmed the parties down after that. I think we were dancing in the kitchen at the time, and she was dancing and leaned against the door to the cellar, which wasn't closed and opened the other way. No door to the cellar should open toward the cellar because she slid down and hit her face on the concrete. Sad thing. Mm-hmm. And she never really recovered over that. But so the most one of the things I would talk about is what fun it was to live in Batavia, and I still have friends there. I like to go back there. I went back to see Tony Zambito when he was in the hospital in his final illness, and he couldn't talk, but he could smile and laugh. And I took along one of those talking dolls that pretended to be George Bush, and he got some laughs out of that. And even I decided it was his birthday. We didn't know when his birthday was, and he couldn't tell us, but we had a birthday party for him. And that was the last time I saw him. A year later, he died. Tony was in the Manhattan Project during World War II, and he believed, and others believed, that in dealing with atomic energy, he got something in his veins, which later, he always had trouble with his arms sort of swelling. And while he lived to be, outlived his wife Rose, he still was knocked down by that. But he's the guy who sticks in my heart the closest, although I still have many friends there, and I like to go to Batavia and see them. Wish it wasn't so far away. Hmm. As far as the college, the great thing for me has been watching Stu's leadership and the board's leadership. The board, they started with a good board. They're all gone now from the board. Neil Burns is emeritus, but they have produced a wonderful college, and my part of it was very small because Al got it started and Stu made it grow. But I'm very pleased with the 5 years that I was there, and I'm very pleased that I went and worked in the community college office and got to know people in all 30 community colleges. And I'll close by saying there are wonderful people working in community colleges and doing a lot of good things for their community and for their students. And I continue to wish them all the luck in the world.
Okay.
I think that'll do it.
Okay. Let me put on pause. Okay. What do you think the impact of Genesee Community College has had on the community? Some of its biggest accomplishments?
Well, I think the biggest accomplishment is the complete... 99% complete acceptance of the college as a real pillar of the community. It has brought jobs. It has brought students from our surrounding counties and even from around New York State. They had a program which was put in after I left in modeling, and that and other programs in health areas. Now, nursing was there when I got there, but it has grown. And the three centers in the other counties are, in effect, mini community colleges. And it's good to keep them as centers because you don't have to provide everything that you do in a college, but they really have large numbers of part-time students. So people who couldn't get to college get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say it's and the cultural things that it's brought to the community. Speakers, they had some wonderful programs. So it has in a county which has had some real financial difficulties because of the decline of agriculture and the movement of some industries, the college has made it a live and vibrant place. So I'm proud of the small part I had in it, and I'm proud of what others have accomplished to bring a first-class community college to Genesee and surrounding counties.
So would you say it was a combination of the programs and accessibility that attracts the students and sets it apart from the other colleges?
Well, you never know what attracts the students. And frankly, there's some that attracts them, like my daughter when I was here, because she didn't know where else to go or what she wanted to do. And that's a large number in community colleges. But had the community college not been there, she might have decided that she wasn't going to go to any college.
Mm-hmm.
But she could take a course, and then she went on to Fredonia, and then she went on to a college in the South, and she got her degree, and is now using it. So it has many effects. Some people want to be work for a newspaper, so they come and they take some journalism courses and they get them. So you really can't generalize. Of course, money is a big thing. Community colleges are significantly cheaper for students, and then when you add in the scholarships that are available to them, I'm fond of telling parents, look, with what you save at community college, you can help your son or daughter go through a master's degree. And those who are concerned about money, others just want to stay at home for another year, be closer to home. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know that you can make a rule. There's a lot of reasons why community colleges are succeeding, and the fact that they now draw more freshmen in the first year than the four-year colleges shows it just meets the need that's needed. That's very important.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you wish had been accomplished at Genesee Community College while you were there that had not?
Say again.
Is there anything that you wish had been achieved at Genesee Community College that has not been?
Any failures? Well, no. I think the growth was about as fast as it could be. Probably I was too close to see some opportunities that might have been missed. Certainly I was slow in moving into the other campuses. The campuses in other counties. In those days, you had to tread very lightly in moving into other counties because it was going to cost them money. And I was so involved in the current campus that I didn't turn my eyes toward those other counties at the time. I invited people to come over and go to school there, but not for us to put it there. And it was just in good time that it came. So I really there were one or two faculty who left for other jobs, and sometimes I was sorry about that. Some people retired maybe a year or two, they found good people. So I really don't have a list of known failures. But I'm sure there were some opportunities that were missed.
Okay.
Fortunately, I think they've been caught up on,
that the state funding was very good for Genesee Community College. Had the relationship between the college and SUNY Central changed at all?
Well, the formula stayed the same until 1970. I'm trying to think of when the Engler formula came in. Maybe in my last year. The formula was very simple and very understandable. One-third, one-third, one-third. The problem with it was the counties were stretched for money and they controlled the whole budget. Now, in one year, I guess it was 1974 now, it's coming back to me, they changed it to up to 40% if you became a open-door college. Well, most of the colleges were, but there were two or three that weren't. So that year, everybody got 40%. And the budget people, as I learned later when I went to work in Albany, were never like to be surprised and get a big bill that they didn't see coming. And so they read it carefully to read up to 40%. Well, then over the future years, it turned out that many colleges never made the 40%. The other thing that was hard about the funding of the colleges was, of course, New York's record for getting budgets done on time. On September, you open the doors in the school. You've got to have a budget. You've got to know how much money you're going to have. You've got to know how many part-time faculty you can hire. And so when the state is late on a budget, it's tough on the campus. Now, in the late 80s, why, they dropped the Engler form and went back to an FTE mode, and I thought that was a mistake because politicians like to give you money for specific purposes. Money for handicapped students, money for computers, money for new programs, money for nursing programs because they're more expensive. And that's what the Engler formula did. Money to encourage counties to put their money in by giving a penalty if they didn't at least pay what they paid last year. So that was what the Engler formula did. It helped out, and the formula in the late 80s, when I was no longer in SUNY Central, which is what caused it, but the formula that they have now is very tough to sell because it's clearly for increased costs. People like to do more than just pay for costs. They want to give it another name. So mm-hmm. I preach that, but nobody listens, and or very few people listen. And community colleges are getting along fine. They make it. The thing is that community colleges also thrive when they can grow, because then you can hire some new younger faculty who are not so expensive as you grow. But a campus like one of our campuses, when they closed down the prisoner programs because of the conservative movement in our federal government, where they stopped funding financial aid for prisoners because people got angry that they were spending money for prisoners, they never caught up with the fact that those who got an education were much more likely to stay out of jail, and it costs more to go to jail than it costs to go to Harvard. And so it was kind of short-sighted, I thought. But that hurt community colleges that had big programs because they had to deal with cuts in budgets, something that Stewart had to deal with. He lost a lot of students, but he was bringing them in from the other counties.
Okay, well, that brings me to the end of the questions. Are there any other comments you would like to make?
That's where we cut to yes. My closing paragraph above.
Okay.
So we'll put it in there.
Very good. Thank you.